Welcome to Table Talks with Kay Woodward. Married for more than 43 years, Kay and her husband Galen have three married sons, nine grandchildren, and are longtime pastors in Albuquerque, New Mexico. With the recent release of her new cookbook, which is filled with treasured recipes and stories, she's excited to bring you into her world of faith and family. So, take a seat at the table with Kay as she welcomes special guests from varied backgrounds and stages of life to dive into relevant and important topics of today. Please enjoy today's episode.
Today's guest, Jillian Chambers, is an author, a speaker, and a life coach who turned her personal tragedy into a story of resilience and purpose. Whether you've experienced a loss or just need encouragement, her journey will inspire you to find strength, faith, and joy no matter your season. You won't want to miss this. Welcome, Jillian Chambers. I'm so glad to have you on Table Talks today. Honestly, just a few months ago, running into you, so bizarre that you happen to be in Albuquerque and we got to hang out for a couple of hours. So I just have been looking forward to this moment for several months. So thank you for joining me today.
Thank you. Thank you for allowing me to.
I'm really glad you're here. You know, we met, it's been over 10 years, but about 10 years or so, on a missions, a fact-finding trip to Guatemala. You and Melinda and I set my y'all on the plane, I think. And I just really started getting to know you then and have then followed you on social media. I love that part of social media, that we can stay connected over all these years and keep up with each other. And then when we got to see each other in person a couple of months ago, it was like we had not missed a beat. And I love that about life. But you have just this huge family now. And
yes,
I think when I met you, I had three grandchildren. Now I have nine, and you have just houses.
I have 10.
Yeah, you have so many grandkids. So tell us a little bit about your family, your kids, your grandkids, and your life before September 2020, because a lot of things changed in your life in September of that year. So just catch us beat on your family and what's going on.
Okay. Well, Kay, I was born at an early age. I'm just kidding. I'm not going to go that far back. I was born in Simi Valley, California. So I like to tease people and say, I'm really a Valley girl. Oh my God. You know, and, most of the, you know, Gen Zers don't even know what that means, but you know, us, we remember the whole Valley girl thing. Yes. So yeah, I was born in California and then moved to Oklahoma and, got married. And then my husband and I, we moved to Nashville in 1997 and, we felt a call to start a church. Before 1997, we were instrumental in traveling all over the world. God put a sound of worship in our hearts and specifically targeted towards the student generation because there was not a lot of music geared towards the student generation. You know, worship in the 90s was mostly, you know, Maranatha, Integrity Hosanna. And it was providing churches with new music and new songs, but it was more of an adult sound. And so, in the late 80s, my husband just felt this passion, and this drive to create music that would stir up a generation to worship the Lord. And so we did, we wrote songs, we traveled all over the world, and it was really neat because God actually called us to Nashville, Music City. And we felt called to what he would refer to as the minstrels. And a friend of ours who had been traveling with us some at the time, Israel Houghton, actually was staying in our house. We were doing a conference together and he said, would you guys consider moving to Nashville? I have a lot of musician friends that just really need what you guys have. So we began to pray about it in 1997. We moved to Nashville and we started what's called the Oasis Church. We began to pastor, which was a stretch because we had been evangelists. You know, you blow up, blow out, right? This was like, you got to be there every 6 days. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, bringing it every 6 days, you know, great service, great ministry, great music, all that. And, you know, God really used the Oasis to minister to a lot of people. We had thousands of people. We had three campuses at one time. I have five kids. I call them my tribe of five. And, four of them are married. And one of them is a sophomore at Belmont University. So she's right here in town. And out of the four who are married, I have 10 grandchildren. And by the time this airs, hopefully it's okay to say, and one more on the way. And so that makes 11. So yeah, they keep me very busy, very, very busy. But yeah, pastoring, I was very involved in the church. My husband saw a teaching gift in me. And so from day one, he always had me teaching, co-leading worship with him, always involved, took me everywhere with him. He never really liked to go into rooms or spaces without taking me there. And I really appreciated that because that drew out so many giftings that I didn't realize were inside of me. And it gave me opportunities to explore and experience really what God had placed in me. So I worked with our sermon teams, our creative teams, our media teams. Our outreach was my favorite. Love doing outreach. That's how we met, through C3 Global. And I love traveling and you know, meeting the needs of other people. And I used to tell people, I used to go to Cambodia every year before 2020. And I used to tell people, I go for me. You know, I'm not just going to help others. It does something inside of me when I go, and it reminds me of the blessing and the grace that God has given us in America and my family and all the things that he's given us. And so, you know, my family, a lot of them involved in church, on staff in church, served in church, grew up in church. You know how that is. And we never compartmentalized church. It wasn't either church or family. It was church and family. And we just included, our kids were packing food bags. I'd pull them out of school to go deliver food bags if I felt like it was appropriate. All kinds of outreach. We included our entire family. So we were a family unit. And lots of my kids sing, worship leaders, youth pastor, all kinds of fun stuff. Well, in 2019, I was on a mission trip. I was in Cambodia. And, or 2018, pardon me. And while I was gone, my oldest son called to tell me that he thinks that my husband was having a mental breakdown. And, long story short, we discovered that we had black mold in our house, and the black mold in our house was deadly to my husband. It caused, it's kind of like 20% of people have a, you know, their DNA and their makeup, their chromosomes are very, very sensitive to black mold. I lived in the house, my daughters lived in the house, my son lived in the house. It didn't impact us the same way as that it did my husband. And, you know, I came home in 2018 to a very alien form of my husband. He was schizophrenic. He was manic. He had spent so much money. I was only gone 10 days, and he'd spent all this money and out all this stuff in my house when I came home. And I was like, what is happening? And so it took us on a real journey to try to discover what was wrong. And we did discover that he had what's called mold psychosis, which impacts parts of your brain. And it, a lot of people that have mental health issues don't realize it, but it, for some people, it could be that they're just living in a house that's ridden with mold. And if they moved out, their brain would start to heal. And we started on a holistic path. But before that happened, because of the sickness, we had a transition that happened with our church where another church stepped in and took over. And there were stipulations, and there was, you know, we just had, we thought we had a process. We thought we had an, or, you know, you're gonna have to edit this out. We thought that we actually had a certain, the plan that was presented was not the plan that was performed with the church transition. And so, you know, I stayed on staff all the while trying to, you know, find healing with my husband. And and we did, we found a healing process. It was that's a whole rocky road in and of itself, complete with manifesting this mania. And it was a roller coaster ride because we went the holistic route, which, you know, as you know, takes longer. It's not as quick, but it's more natural. And so once we got the mold, we actually got the mold out of our house, but then we had to get it out of our bodies. So we had to go through a whole detox. And even though it was a slow process, I mean, it was working, you know. And, but in 2020, in December of 2019, we decided, you know what, we're just going to step away completely from the church, hand off completely to this other church, let them run with it. And we're going to seek God. We're going to find healing. We're going to find rest, and then we're going to refresh. And so because we started in evangelism and traveling all over the world with worship and teaching, and we would do marriage seminars and all kinds of leadership stuff. You know, we're partnered with John Maxwell's organization. And so we had all of this, you know, we had all this experience, you know, in our repertoire. So we started traveling in 2020, but as everybody remembers, 2020 is when COVID was, you know, launched in our country, and nobody traveled. Nobody went anywhere. So that caused us to really have to kind of pivot. We got real creative, And we started, you know, writing out our vision, writing out plans. One of those plans was a book that I'd had in my heart for a really long time. I'm passionate about behavioral science. I'm passionate about the way people are wired and how it impacts their behavior and their decision-making and their responses and things. And so I studied under a man by the name of Dr. Sandy Culkin, who was the founder and CEO of PeopleKeys. He trained me in the DISC profile, which is a part of the behavioral science. And there were several other elements and other profiles that he trained me in. And so I just loved it so much. And I utilized it as a pastor. I utilized it in all of our organization, our assimilation, our outreach. And I realized when you understand how someone's wired, you can put them in the right seat on the bus and they're happy to show up to work. When you put a person in the wrong seat on the bus, they dread it, you know? And so taking all that information, I thought, you know, I really want to write a book about this. So I started a book in 2020 called Wired, and it was based on behavioral science and how I utilized that with my marriage, my family, and our church and our ministry. And I also consulted different businesses in their staffing because they had great people. They were just in the wrong seat on the bus, you know? And so I loved it. So in 2020, I started that book in addition to us traveling. So when COVID hit, we kind of had to pivot. I kept working on my book. We did as much as we could online, you know, as far as like, we'd go on Facebook Live at like 1 o'clock on Sunday and he would lead worship and we'd teach a little bit. We started seeing, oh my gosh, people are watching. We would have 2,000 and 3,000 people watching, you know, and then the replays would even triple. And so I just looked at my husband like, man, we got a bigger church than we had in Nashville, you know? And so, in June of 2020, I finished my manuscripts, turned it into my publisher. And then in July, my husband started having these pains in his body and they started putting him on some medication, which started changing him. He started acting very different and it really concerned me. And so in September, we decided we need to sell our house and downsize because life has changed and we're not living at the same level of income. So we need to, if your outgo exceeds your income, your upkeep will be your downfall, right? So we decided we'll sell the house and we'll move to a smaller place. Plus we only had one child in the house at the time. She was 14 at the time or 15 at the time. And so we were progressing in that route. You know, it's a lot to back up your stuff, to get your house ready, you know, renovating and painting and all the fun things. Well, we were proceeding in our plans to move. And on September 23rd, I woke up and Danny was dead. He passed away in the middle of the night. And it was tragic and horrific. And the elements and the details of the story I'll probably share later because my family is still in a process of healing from it. But it was very tragic and unexpected. There are some components to the medication that we feel like expedited some of his, you know, just his mental decay and some things like that. And so it was very horrific. I did not expect it. I had just turned 50. I was not ready at all for this. We had just come through this horrific 2019 and we were rebuilding. And so it's almost like I felt like I'm just so blindsided, you know, and I was really upset. I was really, really upset with the Lord because I thought, how did you let this happen? Like, help me understand how this happens. And I think a lot of times, Kay, we confuse pain with punishment. And at that point in my life, I kept thinking, what did I do wrong? What did I do wrong that my husband had to die? Like, where did I mess up? And I remember the Lord saying, this is not about you. This is not about you. And you know, when I actually found him, when I found his body, I was in such shock and I was in such sorrow and I was just horrified. But I heard the Spirit of the Lord say, his life was big, but his death is bigger. You have to trust me. And I didn't understand what that meant. And I didn't want to understand what that meant because I didn't feel like it was a fair exchange. I didn't want to exchange his life for something bigger. Why couldn't he be a part of it? We did everything together. Why couldn't he be a part of the bigger? Why does he have to be absent in the bigger? You know what I'm saying? And so it was a real tough journey. And, you know, I remember that day calling 911. And I remember the first responder coming in and trying to resuscitate and all that stuff. And I just remember the look on his face. He was so passionate, you know, about this resurrection and so passionate, you know, to try to just resurrect my husband. And I just remember feeling in my heart, I just remember looking at him and saying, I'm so sorry. And I don't know why I was sorry for him, but I think I was sorry for him because his passion in his eyes was so real. And that kind of turned me into this person of, now I'm sorry for everybody else. So my kids started coming to the house. You know, we had some family come to the house, called a pastor friend of mine, Chris Hodges in Alabama, who had been walking with us through our whole journey of pastoring. And he sent another pastor up, Lane Schrantz, to my house to walk my family through. Because of the church transition, we hadn't really planted anywhere because of COVID. We just felt like this island. And that's the worst thing you can feel in the midst of a crisis, is that you're alone. And even though we weren't alone, our Oasis community still, most of them still found a way to help us and lift us up. But Pastor Chris really came in, and Highlands really came in and just embraced us and carried us through. It was the hardest thing I've ever been through in my life. And, you know, I remember one day I was so tired of crying. I just was like, I'm so tired of crying, Lord. And he reminded me of this trip that we went on. I think it was our 27th anniversary. We were actually in Hawaii with Dr. Culkin and his wife. And my crazy husband, in his late 50s, says, I want to go surfing. And I'm thinking, you want to go surfing? And he's like, yeah, I want you to film me. So he rented me a GoPro camera, which is a waterproof camera. And he gets a surfboard. He starts, you know, swimming out in the ocean. And I'm walking out in the ocean. It didn't dawn on me how deep he was going to go. So I think I'm okay until all of a sudden, you know, you're going out in the ocean, it gets deeper, deeper, deeper. And then I'm trying to keep my head above the water, and these crazy waves, cause it's Hawaii, these crazy waves are like crashing over me. And I'm so like just fighting the waves, and I'm just trying to get to where he is. And he keeps turning around like, are you coming? You know? And I'm like, oh my gosh. So I'm trying to fight for my life here. Right. So I get, I finally get to the point where you just kind of tap out, you know, I'm just like, I can't, I have nothing left. And so I kind of just put my hands down and I'm like, I can't do this. I can't fight these waves anymore. And it was so funny, Kay, because the wave picked me up, took me further away from Danny. And then all of a sudden it brought me out closer to him. And then it picked me up again, took me further away from Danny, closer to the shore. And then it brought me a little closer. And I realized, I just surrendered to the waves. I'm going to get there. So I thought, why didn't I think of that sooner? Well, this particular day I was just grieving and I was crying. And the Lord said, Jill, I need you to stop fighting the waves of grief. He said, I need you to surrender to the waves. He said, I am trying to take you to a place you've never been. And it's the waves of grief that are going to get you there. But you keep fighting the vehicle that I'm trying to transport you to your purpose through. And I was like, oh my gosh, because I'm a glass half full person. I'm Silver Lining Sally. And I could not find a silver lining in the midst of all this grief. I couldn't find it. I just couldn't figure it out. You know, I couldn't find the joy. And I could, you know, he says he's going to work all things together for our good. I'm like, how are you going to do that? How are you going to do that? You know, and in fact, you know, Romans 8:28 says he will work all things together for our good. For so long, I thought he was going to work all things together for good. And so he's going to take the thing and make it good. And I remember telling him, how are you going to make this good? Unless he comes, I mean, in my mind, he's gone. And I remember the Lord saying, well, all means all, Jill. So if I can't use all of it, I can't use any of it. So if I said, you know, if you and I were on an airplane, like we were previously together, and I said, hey, everybody, I want all of you to stand up. Well, if everyone except one person doesn't stand up, that means all didn't stand up. And the Lord showed me that means if I can't use everything, all the things in your life, I can't use any of it, because I'm not a liar. And I said I would use all things. I would turn all things for your good. But what I realized was he can't turn the thing into good. The thing's already gone. So the thing in my case was my husband. His death. He can't resurrect him and make him good. But what he can do is he can take the death and turn it into something good for me. And so honestly, it was, you know, from the day he died, I remember my family was over at the house and my daughter, my oldest daughter, saw someone post on Facebook about Danny's death. And we hadn't said anything yet. We were still in shock. It was so much to embrace. And I remember thinking, I've got to go make a post. People are going to think this is a rumor. They're not going to believe it. So I went into my room and I shut the door and I started praying and I was crying and I was like, I can't believe I'm making this post. I just can't believe this. And I made it. And then my phone started blowing up and Pastor Chris said, you need to put your phone down and you need to be there for your family. And so I did. And you know how it is when death happens, all of a sudden within, 24 hours, you're making all these arrangements. You still can't even believe you're making them. You're in such shock. I'm like, I can't believe I'm picking out a casket. I'm looking at flowers. I'm picking a time. I'm looking at plots. Like, what in the world? You know? And so you hit decision fatigue, cause you start to doubt, am I making the right choice? Am I making the right decision? You start, you think, I hope I'm doing this right. I've walked through people in our church. I walked through several of those funerals with those people. I was at the funeral home with them, picking out, making the arrangements, setting up the service order, all executing the service. But to imagine I'm doing it for my family on behalf of celebrating my husband's life, it didn't seem real at all. But what's crazy is God in his sovereignty, somehow, he sanctifies every moment. And somehow he was there at every step of the way. He just kept revealing himself constantly. Constantly throughout my pain, he would just show up and prove his presence would not, he just because I'm in pain, he's not going to evacuate the premises. And I just remember seeing God in every like crazy aspects, crazy stories. And I mean, even the casket that we picked out was called Highland Cedar. And that was so significant to me because we celebrated his life at Church of the Highlands. And so there was that little things like that, that I felt like God was kind of, I call him God winks, where he kind of goes, got you, girl. I got you, girl. And even in the midst of the pain, even in the midst of the sorrow, it was just like so crazy how he's just right there. And one time I remember sitting in my room and I just kind of felt like I was lost in the darkness because it felt like my light had been blown out. And, okay, I'm like, oh, I'm bubbly light, bright, bright, Miss Bright Light. You know what I'm saying? And I just couldn't find it. And I was really worried. And I thought, how am I going to get over this? How am I going to get through this? I don't know how to do this. And I remember just feeling lost. And I told the Lord, I was like, I don't know which way is forward. I feel like I'm engulfed in this abyss of darkness and I cannot see my way out. And we were actually, I think it was 2000. Let me think. It was 2010, I believe. We got invited to go on a trip with some pastor friends of ours, David and Nicole Crank. They had just got their scuba diving license. Danny and I had our scuba diving license. So we all flew to the Cayman Islands. This was, it was back in 2011, actually. I think it was 2011. And Danny and I, we all went under the water at the reef in Cayman, which is a very world-renowned site that people go scuba diving at. It's beautiful. It's so clear. You can go hundreds of feet down and it's so clear.
I have also been scuba diving in Cayman Islands. I'm not certified, but I had to be with a dive master, but... Yes, I know exactly what you're talking about.
The reefs and the coral, and it's so beautiful. And so my husband, of course, he was a type A, so he pushed the limits. If they said you could go 200 feet deep, he's going to go 400 feet deep, of course. Well, the deeper you go, the darker it gets. So we're staring at the wall, and this moray eel darts out in front of us, and it startles me. And so I kind of float around, and I find myself with my back to the reef and to the wall, and I'm staring into this abyss of darkness. And Danny's chasing the moray eel. Because he's type A, like I said. So I'm sitting there by myself alone in this darkness and I'm freaking out. My body is shutting down. I'm getting anxious. I feel like I'm paralyzed because all I can think about is I can't see.
Hey friends, I'm so glad you're here. If you're enjoying this episode, please take a second to subscribe, leave a quick review, and share it with a friend. It's the best way to help more people find the podcast and be encouraged. Thanks for listening, and now back to the episode.
There could be a shark literally coming up on me and I won't see it, And so my, fear is like ravaging my mind because what I remember as a child is darkness distorts, whenever you're going to bed and all of a sudden the backpack on the back of your door turns into a monster, As the lights go down, everything distorts. And so that's the way I felt underneath the sea and this water with this darkness facing me. And I remember in 2011, facing that darkness, the Lord said, Jill, let your eyes adjust to the dark. And I just sat there for a minute And all of a sudden I saw this eagle stingray. It was a, yeah, it was an eagle stingray. So it was black with white spots and it was just like soaring. It was so beautiful. And then I saw turtles. I saw schools of fish. I felt like the Holy Spirit said, this was swimming behind you the whole time. You just didn't see it. So you had to let your eyes adjust to the dark.
I would think the whole journey of grief, I mean, it's, I've talked to so many people. I mean, you know, like I've lost my parents, but to lose a spouse or a child, I can, that journey is a, you know, a whole different journey that someone's on, and you're so young and you, it wasn't in the plan. Nobody had been, you know, sick unto death. I mean, this was not anything that you
were. No, it was, so, yeah.
I mean, what is like, what would be your biggest surprise, do you think, as you've been on, it's a journey of healing. Cause you said, ride the waves. It's not, I mean, I can imagine, I mean, you, there's not a box you check off and say, okay, now I'm through the journey and I'm at my destination, I'm healed. And we're going to get into what you do to help people now, but what has been the biggest surprise to you during this journey?
I think honestly, that story about the scuba diving, when the Lord said, let your eyes adjust to the dark. And he said, the marine life was swimming behind you the whole time. You just didn't see it. He took me to Isaiah 45, where it says, I will give you treasures out of darkness, secret riches that are hidden, so that you know that I'm the Lord that calls you by name. And I remember the Lord saying, you need to let your eyes adjust in the dark. And what came to me was God was with me the whole time through every moment. From the time I woke up that morning, he was with me. He was with me when I was walking throughout the house searching for Danny. And then he was at the place I found Danny waiting for me. And that overwhelmed me to think, because you feel so alone. I got married when I was 19 years old. I don't know life without, it was always Danny and Jill, Danny and Jill, Danny and Jill, Danny's wife, Danny's wife, Danny's wife, you know? And so my whole identity was in being Danny's wife. I mean, I was, my identity's in Christ, but ultimately I didn't realize how much of my identity was in being someone's wife and someone's spouse until it was no longer there. And I think that what happens in grief is you're going through sort of this transformation. You're going through a transformation of what was into what can be. And I work with a lot of widows and widowers right now. Church of the Highlands, we launched a widows initiative last year. We're serving, honestly, upwards of 1,000 widows just through Highlands. And I created a small group curriculum that walks us through the stages of grief. The stages of grief are based on Rick Warren's experience when he lost his son. And those stages are different than your clinical grief stages. And it starts with shock, which is where I was. I was in shock. And then you kind of start coming out of shock and you start realizing, this is just sad. I just miss him. You know, I miss him. I mean, I miss his chomping in the, you know, of his food. I miss all the things that used to drive me crazy. I mean, I would give anything to hear him slurp. You know what I'm saying? Like, just, you know what I'm saying? I miss that. And so you just go through sorrow. And then there's the struggle. The struggle is anger. And you're like, God, how did you let this happen? I just remember asking him why? And I remember feeling like the Lord was like, you know, I can give you an answer, but it's still not going to be good enough. Because it's not going to bring him back. And I remember there came a time, because after struggle, you have to surrender. And that's where everything changes, is when you get to surrender. You have to surrender, not just your why did this happen, but you also have to surrender your need to know why this happened. Why do I need to know? And it took a long time for me to do that. It took a long time for me to surrender. And I remember trying to figure things out, putting pieces together, you know, like my own private investigation, like I turned into a private investigator, trying to figure out how this happened, why it happened, blah, blah, blah. And then I remember the Lord saying, you're going to spend the rest of your life and not come up with the answer you're looking for. Cause the answer you're looking for he's not coming back. And so I had to surrender that. I had to surrender my life script. We all have our own internal life script that we write our story. We think it's going to look this way. We think it's going to look that way. You know, when we had this transition of the church, that was not in our life script. And yet it happened. His death happened so quickly after that. It took me years before I even grieved that. I hadn't even grieved the church. And so I'm grieving my husband and I'm feeling, you know, progress is happening. And all of a sudden grief comes and slaps me in the face about losing my church, you know, and losing that community that we built. And then the Lord reminded me, he said, you can lose it or you can sow it. You can lose it. The thief steals, has to give you seven times, or you can sow it. I can give you 100-fold. And I decided, you know what? I'm going to sow it. I'm going to sow the church. Not only that, but the day we buried Danny, I got up that morning and I heard the Lord say, you're not burying him. You're planting him. He says, you sow the greatest seed you've ever sown, you will see the greatest harvest your family's ever known. And that day when he was lowered into the ground, I'll probably cry. We began to worship. My kids and I, I was kneeling on the ground. My daughter was kneeling on the ground. And my oldest daughter started singing. And we began to worship because he always taught us to water your seed with worship. And we knew we cannot have this moment of planting him without watering that seed with worship. To the point, Kay, where the funeral director came up to me and she said, I have never in all my years, 40 years of this, I've never had a burial like this. No one has ever had this powerful moment of worship. And I said, because you've never buried a Danny Chambers. Wow. And she was just overwhelmed. And I knew that was the beginning right then and there. Something awakened in her, something awakened in the crew that was pouring the dirt on him. They were just weeping as they're pouring. I don't know these people, but there was something that fell, you know, from heaven to earth that day that I knew I'm sowing him as a seed. So from then on, I tried to change my language. Instead of saying, feeling like he was stolen from me, I had to correct myself and say, you know what? He did feel like he was taken from me, but I'm going to choose to give him back to you, Lord. Mm-hmm. And when I chose to give back to God, what was his already, God unleashed, that was surrender. And after surrender is sanctification. Then God starts opening the eyes of your understanding. And just like down in that scuba diving moment, when my eyes adjusted into the dark, that scripture in Isaiah, where he says, I will give you treasures out of darkness. All of a sudden, the treasure out of darkness that I began to see was the sanctification of my struggle in my surrender that showed me God's presence. And I'm telling you, everything changed. And after sanctification, we talk about serving others. And that's where my life is. I just want to take my story and I just want to serve others. You know, there's a real deficit in not only the world, but in the church. You know, the Bible says to take care of widows and orphans, right? In James 4:7, but it also says in Acts 6, it says the church grew. This was after the day of Pentecost. It says the church grew and the women came to the disciples and complained. They said the widows are being neglected in the daily distribution of food. They're being overlooked. And that's where the apostles say, it is not right for us to serve tables. We've got to do the work of the ministry. Select from among you seven men of faith and power to take care of this business. Well, this business is referring to the neglect of the widows. It is, I'm telling you, when you become a widow at age 50, your eyes are opened to so many things they were closed to for so long. My eyes have been wide open.
It's like, you know, we got to chat, but you've written this whole curriculum because I just feel like sometimes it's because, you know, people don't know what to do or what to say. Yeah. So it paralyzes us from, yeah, you know, doing what we need to do to reach out because we're sad too. And
yeah, absolutely.
You don't want to stir up the grief in someone. You're like, what's the right thing? What's the wrong thing? But you wrote this curriculum for widows and widowers, but you mentioned it's on the website at Church of the Highlands, but you, because that's through your grief, you've been serving other people that have walked through. And you said people have just written to you and text you and called you and that you never dreamed there were so many people walking.
You know, 2,800 women every day in the U.S. become a widow. That's almost 20,000 a week. So, and the crazy thing is 76% are under the age of 59. And so when I became, you know, I couldn't even, you know, I'll be honest with you. When I would think of the word widow, I would think of, you know, the Tweety Bird in the little cage and the old lady that's like knitting and rocking in front of the Tweety Bird. That was the image of a widow. And I just didn't identify with that. And when I found out 76% of widows are under the age of 59, the life obstacles and opportunities they face without their spouse are enormous. And, you know, I felt this mission to, cause I kept having the same conversations. I mean, widows from all over the world. I mean, I even had a Zoom call with a widow from Netherlands, you know, the Ukraine, 500 women every week in Ukraine becoming widows because of this war. It is just rampant and no one knows what to do because of what you said. It's so accurate. people don't know what to say. So in the beginning, it's really hard because people are like walking on eggshells, and they're mourning the loss of your spouse as well. But then, you know, after the celebration of life is over and the meals are delivered to your house and everyone's calling and sending flowers and checking, it's quiet. And, you know, people would say things like, well, your children should take care of you. And I'm like, how are they going to take care of me when they've just lost their father? That's not an accurate response to how to take care of a widow. And it's interesting because, you know, I have a group now, we call ourselves vow fulfillers because we said till death do us part. And we did. And the term vow fulfiller, it kind of reframed the loss of our spouse because we, widow and widower, kind of subconsciously made us feel pitiful. I'm just gonna be real. So widow made me feel pitiful. And then I realized I'm not pitiful, I'm powerful. I fulfilled my vow. I said till death do us part, and I did. So I'm not pitiful. This is just a different season of life. And when I began to speak to people as vow fulfillers, I saw them start rising up and getting straight, straightening up their back, bringing hope, healing. You know, one of the biggest things I've seen through this small group curriculum is just community and the power of community. Because as a person, when you lose your spouse, you don't know where you fit anymore. And so you kind of feel like you've lost your place in society because you're not married anymore, but you don't feel single. And, you know, a lot of churches have married or single. They don't have widowed. Some churches have widowed, you know, on their contact card. So you fill it out. But then they don't have a place. You know, even coming into Highlands, Pastor Chris said, I want you to help us launch this initiative. What do we need to do? And I said, just give us a place, give us a seat at the table. In every part of your service, if you're speaking and you're preaching and you say, if you're single or divorced or maybe you're married in this room, how about, or widowed, just put us right in there so that we feel included. Because it's confusing. It's like, you know, it's not an identity crisis. Because I feel like I know who I am in Christ, but I call it identity displacement. I know who I am. I don't know where I belong. And so my heart's desire is for churches specifically to create a place within their community where those that have lost their spouse can just find community with people that understand what they're going through. My group, it's so funny. I started with 6 of us and now there's like almost 35 of us and it's just organic. But what's happening now is I've been doing this since 2022 and I'm watching these people find their hope and their healing. And now they're starting to reinvent. That's the last stage I talk about in this curriculum, is reinvention, and they're reinventing. But it takes time to get there. You know, some people jump right into relationship thinking they're going to replace their spouse and it never ends well. And, you know, I encourage people, if you've lost your spouse, give yourself time to reinvent because, you know, I'm different. I'm a different version of myself than I was in 2020. I've learned a lot about me, honestly. And if I jumped into a relationship super quickly, it would really be a disservice to the person that I was in relationship with because it's not authentically who I am anymore. But it took me time and this journey to discover who am I now? Who is Jill in 2025? You see what I'm saying? And all this healing and this processing comes to this point of reinvention. I have a therapist who became a widow about 9 months ago. And I was sharing with her, you know, just these stages. And she said, I am so glad that you talk about reinvention. She said, because a lot of people don't talk about that. She said, even in therapy, I have to talk about it because there's a crucial point in our journey that if we do not reinvent, no matter what we're going through, whether it's loss of life, loss of job, loss of purpose, she said, if we don't reinvent, we will be stuck there the rest of our life. She said, I've watched it for 40 years. There's a pattern in people that if they don't get up, after a certain amount of time, they're going to just stay there. And it's miserable because you don't belong there. You know, death is not a life sentence. It's an opportunity to, it's an opportunity to come to a different life. You know, life's not going to be the same, but it'll be different, but it doesn't have to be bad. You know, I was talking to a friend of mine who just lost her husband and you know, she's walked with me through my journey. So she's a little further ahead in her journey just because we've walked together. And I talked to her, I said, isn't it interesting that when God made a caterpillar, he intended for it to be a butterfly? It never intended for a caterpillar to remain a caterpillar. But the transition and the metamorphosis between the Caterpillar and the butterfly happens in isolation, in darkness, in restraint. And that's part of reinvention, is the isolation, darkness, and restraint that comes from grief. It's not meant to hijack you and hold you, incarcerate you to that moment forever. That is to hold you so that the metamorphosis can take place and you start reinventing. And so what's happened in my life over the last several years is I have felt these changes. They're good changes. You know, when you look at a butterfly, the caterpillar is still a part of the butterfly. It's just different. It's beautiful. It's majestic. It doesn't crawl on the ground anymore. It flies. And so if we really truly surrender to the process that God has for us, not the process culture has, not the process we think we're supposed to have, but if we surrender to that process that God has for us, there can truly be a metamorphosis and there can be a transformation. And it comes a point in time where you start feeling like I want to get out of here. You know, about 2 years in, all the reality hit me. And I was like, you know what? He's not thinking about me. He's doing his thing in heaven. He's up there probably leading worship, doing his thing, fulfilling his eternal purpose. And so I'm not going to sit. I'm done. I'm done sitting in this isolation. I'm so done. And I remember pressing through that tension. And the tension is you feel like if I move forward, am I abandoning him? You know, if I go through healing, does that mean that I'm betraying what we had? And I actually saw a therapist and I told her, I said, I'm feeling a little bit of guilt in trying to move forward. Cause I feel like if I move forward, I'm leaving him in the past and I feel like I'm abandoning him back here. And she said, that's not even accurate. She said, if you move forward, she said, you're one step closer to him, not one step further away. And I thought that's true. And I also heard this one woman, she was beautiful. It was this 85-year-old woman that was doing a speech at USC. They have an aging research department. And she talked about her experience as a widow. She said, there will come a point in time when they will move from your head to your heart. So instead of your thoughts being consumed with the loss and what you're missing and what they're missing, all of a sudden they drop down in your heart and they become a part of everything you're experiencing. It's just in a different way. And that happens. But a lot of times what people do is because they're consumed with the memories and consumed with the moments and consumed with the loss, they make decisions based on loss rather than decisions based on the rearview mirror instead of decisions based on the windshield.
So much wisdom. And I'm assuming that you share a lot of this when you're doing the whole curriculum on being, you know, widow and grief and all that. I'm just like, such wisdom. I mean, that is, and it makes sense, but it wouldn't make sense until like you've had this epiphany, you know, and
yes,
we hear it and then we need to, you know, to internalize it. And I mean, that was one of the questions I was going to ask you is how you celebrate the good. And you just answered it while honoring the difficult, because that's that's counterintuitive. Yeah. Like I saw that even with the death with my parents, because I would catch myself in a burst of laughter after, you know, then I'm thinking, wait, I shouldn't be laughing. I mean, I'm mourning. I shouldn't be laughing and thinking about the future. It's just, it pulls you in so many different directions, but you've obviously learned so much and come to terms and you're teaching other people. And I'd love to, as we get closer to ending this today, to speak to that, because there has to be the joy comes in the morning. There has to be,
yes,
not dishonoring, yes, who you, yes, lost. By having joy. Yeah. I mean, I saw you with your grandkids and in Disney, you know, and you're laughing and fun, but that's honoring to your spouse.
Yes. Exactly. Nobody that has exited the planet, if you could get a pass to heaven and sit down with them, none of them would say, please be miserable without me the rest of your life. None of them would say that. They would say, live your life. And I learned that laughter is not betrayal. And I honestly, people struggle with laughter. Like you just said, you kind of start feeling guilty. But really, would our parents, would our spouses, would our children, those that we've loved ones we've lost, would they seriously want us to sit here and spend the rest of our life, the rest of our breath, all of our, everything that we've gone through in just misery? No, they would not. I had a dream one time. My husband was, we were in, like I was sleeping, he was facing me in bed and he looked at me and goes, why are you alone? And I woke up like, oh my gosh, were you here? I don't know what that looks like on the other side, but I could smell him. And so I'm like, Okay. I'm working on that. You know what I'm saying? But it's kind of like throughout your journey, there's this God, you know what? From a widow to another person that's lost someone, I just want to give you permission. Permission. Live your life. You know, don't let misery hijack your purpose. You still, if you have a pulse, you have a purpose. And honestly, if you don't know what that is, I can tell you right now what it is. Your purpose is to add value to other people, to show them the love of Christ, and to show them that they can have the abundant life. And that's it. You can do that through your work. You can do that through community. You can do that through relationship. You can do that through creativity. Look at Kay doing it through a cookbook. It's just taking your passion and focusing it on adding value to people, and that value leading them to Christ. And we make it so complex, but really, honestly, learning to be guilt-free and laughter. I mean, my kids and I, we laugh. In fact, my little vow fulfillers group, when a new person comes in, I take them to coffee and tell them, listen, I would love to invite you to join us, but I need to tell you something. We don't sit around and cry. In fact, we laugh a lot, and that might offend you. And you may not be ready for that, because you might be in a place where you're not certain whether you can move forward or you can laugh. And I just want to warn you about that, because we have moments where there's tears shed, but ultimately, honestly, most of us, we have found such joy and community and belonging with each other that I don't want to forfeit the laughter. You know, I don't think it's God's design. Laughter is like medicine. It literally releases endorphins in your body. It is a biological fact that laughter helps your body heal.
And that's,
we have to laugh.
Yeah, and anyone that suffered loss, like traumatic loss of any sort, and you see that in your ministry still today, and in your, you know, in your ministry as pastors, and we've seen it over all our years in ministry. You know, everyone in their lifetime will suffer loss, period. Yeah. And yes. The Bible, you know, says to us, you know, weeping endures for the night. So there is a season to weep, but joy comes in the morning. And that is so, I mean, you're just, you know, speaking so much truth, because I think that that's a whole different podcast, but learning to have joy, it's not the easiest thing, but I'm sure that you've taught yourself, and you're such a driven, I mean, I've watched this journey with you over the last 4.5 years. I did see that post the day that Danny died, when you finally posted. I thought, this can't be real. This can't be real. What is it you call Danny, your forever? What do you say?
Oh, I call him. Well, when I started posting, I felt like the Lord said, I need you to post your journey. And I'm like, I am not going to post my journey, because I'm private. Danny was the one that told everything. And I thought, well, I don't even know if I'm doing this right. What if I'm failing? And so I had talked to my publisher at the time, and I said, hey, I'm going to make these posts about my journey, and I'm going to hashtag it ferociously and forever.
That's what I'm.
And so, yeah. So when a pastor or a friend of mine or someone calls and says, hey, I've got a friend that lost her husband, I'll say, you know what? Tell her to go to social media, Facebook or Instagram specifically, search bar, hashtag ferociously and forever, and she can walk my journey with me. That seems to be the best first step, because it's like it's a private viewing of my life. And then they make a connection, you know, it's kind of like blogs through those posts, and they make a connection with me, and then there's trust equity. And now they believe me. So when we do end up talking, or when we do end up, you know, meeting, they already feel like she knows what I'm talking about. And so it's a great first step.
Yes. And that's what I would encourage anyone listening, that if you have experienced, you know, this kind of loss, or you know someone that has, that honestly, I think that's a great step, to go to the Instagram and to, you know, do the ferociously and forever hashtag, because I did, I just, because I've had interest in you, and I've gotten to know you, and I felt like that was a God connection all those years ago. And my heart broke, and I wanted to walk it with you, even from a distance. So I think that, you know, people
thank you
following that journey with you. So time goes by so fast. It's what I love doing these podcasts, but I feel like there, it goes so quickly, and I get so caught up in the story. But if you could leave us with, I mean, this is specifically you've had to walk the widow journey, and you are not pitiful. You're far from it. I never got that from you, even on the darkest day. I never got that from you. Your faith has been so inspirational. And I know that you'd rather inspire people another way. You've chosen this way to inspire people.
Yeah.
God has used
it. So true.
God has used it for sure to help
you.
People that are not widows, that are not widowers, but also those that are. So could you leave us with a word, just something hopeful to inspire people to face that whatever they're going through, looks like they can't face another day?
I think that if I had to say a word, it would be you're not alone, because you do feel alone. It's hard because you want the person with skin on them. But if you would allow the Lord to, he said he's close to the brokenhearted and he comforts those who mourn. And I got corrected one day when the Lord said, I'm trying to get close to you, but you're in the way. And I asked him what he was talking about. And he said, you won't admit you're brokenhearted. You keep acting like everything's okay. And he said, I can't locate you because your GPS is wrong. And he said, as soon as you admit you're brokenhearted, I will comfort you. And honestly, what I'll tell you is my whole life I've been in ministry. I gave my heart to Christ 10 times when I was 5 years old, just to make sure, you know? And so I feel like I walked with the Lord, but this walk with God in the middle of grief is different. There's facets of our Father that are illuminated in the middle of the darkness. Even Psalm 23 says, yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I'll fear no evil. Guess what? You can't have a shadow without a light. And so the light of God will come in the midst of your darkness, and you will not be afraid of that evil anymore. I wish I could give you a formula or 10 steps. I can't. The only thing that I know is in my honesty and transparency before my Father and my ability to tell him, okay, my heart's crushed, and being honest with him, it's like he just reaches down every time and just holds me. I physically feel like I'm being carried at times. But it's when I'm honest and transparent. And then you said just one thing, but there's another thing. Our state of emotion is determined by our point of focus. If our point of focus is constantly on the loss, our state of emotion will be hijacked by grief. If our point of focus is on God and his goodness, then our emotions will be joy and peace and trust. I think joy is a fruit of trusting God. So how do you change your point of focus? For me, it was always worship. I had to change my focus by worshiping on God, who's bigger than focusing on my grief that seemed so huge. So that's the one thing I would tell you, is your state of emotion is determined by your point of focus. If you don't like your state of emotion, change your point of focus, focus on the Lord, and your emotions will follow. That would be the last thing I would say.
Could you, I know you'd love to pray over those that will listen right away, and those, I mean, in the future, we have no idea where this will go, and those right. that need just a word of covering over them. Would you just close us in prayer?
Absolutely. So Father, I'm so grateful for this opportunity to share this journey. This is not the journey that I thought. This wasn't in my life script. Never wanted to be a spokesmodel for widowhood, but Lord, somehow you've allowed me to turn my pain into purpose. And just like me, Lord, the person that is listening, the person that is watching right now, you see them, you hear them, you know them, you created them, you have purpose for them. So I pray, Father, that you would give them the strength and the courage and the fortitude to rise up out of the middle of the ashes. You promised us that you would give beauty for ashes. And so God, I pray that somehow through this podcast, your strength would ride in on our voices. Your strength would ride in through the air of our the sounds and the tones. And God, that they would rise up and that they would choose to not waste their pain. God, their pain can be wasted or it can be used for your glory. So I pray, God, right now that you would change their paradigm of who they are, change their paradigm of their situation. Lord, it's painful to lose someone. It really is painful to go through grief, but it's also possible that the pain can be turned into purpose. So Lord, I pray that you would just encourage my friend right now who's watching. I pray that they would be so inspired by this story, that they would press into you to find that purpose, because your word says it's in you that we live and move and have our being. It's not in art, it's not in philosophy, it's not in research, it's not in Google, it's not in social media, it's in you. So God, I pray to the person that's watching that they would find their strength, their courage, and their purpose as they press into you. Life is not over. It won't be the same. It will be different. but it doesn't have to be bad. In fact, it can be better. So I thank you, Father, for encouraging my friend. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen. Well, Jill, you are such a gifted communicator, and I just pray that God would bless you in every step you take and every decision you make and in your future. And I know he already has, but I just pray that he blows your mind with in your life and what's going to be in store for you and your whole extended Chambers family, that that God will just, he will wow you with what's ahead. And I thank you so much for joining me. Thank you. Thank you.
I love you, girl, so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining me today on Table Talks. For more content and information about upcoming episodes, please visit my website at kwoodward.com. You can also explore other podcast links and resources there. Until next time.